The round, pretty eyes of the Hebrides, too. Mirrors and smoke. Mary Ann McLeod woke up outside the Oval Office in a filmy Washington dawn. Her son Donald frowned nearby, reading Fear she had lent him by Bob Woodward. She talked directly these days with Donald. They'd become easier with each other, their explanations intersecting in a soft and delicate rhythm that was always reminding her of the tide in the Hebrides intermingling with the shore. For a long time, of course, their discourses before had been polite and parallel, but at last now it was possible to offer word by word for acceptance, brick by brick, a tower. She said, "Of course, the book is a CIA strategy. However, what concerned me most was that peculiar portion about you never entering the Oval Office alone at daybreak because you were afraid of all the ghosts of former presidents. If that were so, dear, I could speak to them." Donald asked with a filial indignation, "You know, don't you? You don't really think that of me. I just don't go in alone, but with someone the neocons wouldn't like to lose as well on a fatal morning." She said, "Yes, that's why you always were so fine at the military academy. I knew you'd like turning stress into strategy and popularity. You'd moonlight in Manhattan, but it was just to escape empty time." That odd man Bolton had arrived without a greeting. Donald and Mary Ann took him into the Oval Office. It was still all gold and sudden intersecting horizons, like a Hebridean morning on the sea. Bolton nodded to Mary Ann brusquely, himself feeling unusual in this place. Whoever else Trump brought in, he thought, was going to be a circus anyway. Bolton said, "It's confirmed the Russians just supplied 3S-300 air defence systems in battalions to Syria because of the Israelis, British and French, playing mirrors and smoke with bombing to down the monitor plane full of Russian military techs. I've accused the Russians of escalation, but I don't like being set up for Suez Mark II by that gang of amateur chessmen." President Eisenhower, explained Donald to his mother, at Suez wouldn't have had that done to him. I admire Eisenhower, who was not at that hour in the room. She asked, "And Munro, I believe?" "Yes, the Munro Doctrine was just to keep the British out of our neighbourhood. It wasn't until Teddy Roosevelt that it was turned to war." Donald thought, Bolton's bloodlust is tempered by his need for isolation. "Globalism feeds on military spending," he told Bolton, sat at the old desk with its new picture of Ivanka. Mary Ann dusted that with her trim, white island fingers. She asked, "Why is it that men trust no one but their sons-in-law, not their sons? Like you with Jared Kushner." He considered, "Their daughter would not choose a betrayer of either their close plans or of their brains. She knows I love the devout ones, the ministers like your father. And any massacre in Gaza was not with Jared's consent." Bolton exclaimed, "Patagonia!" and paced the floor like a president, arms locked behind his back. Trump explained he is referring to despair. "There is a theory the Israelis are using the post-Falklands War British power over Argentina to colonize Patagonia, build an escape country of frozen milk and frozen honey if there is too much danger, where they awkwardly are." That would explain the risky desperation, the disregard for earthly opinion. But I think their Russian plane plan was a weird one, even for them. "I've no carriers in the area, though, and don't intend to send one." "Do you know, Mother, one real problem?"